Continuing our reading of Srila Bhagavatamrita, we're going to start this morning the sixth chapter of the first part. Narada Muni, after hearing from Ugrasena, about the glories of Uddhava, has become very enthusiastic to meet Uddhava. So he went running off, and he didn't just go running off in any state, in any mood. He was in anticipation of meeting Uddhava. He was feeling ecstatic. So that's where the sixth chapter begins. Sri Parikshiruvacha Tachuvarya Mahaprema Rasasvena Rasasveshena Yantrita Mahavishnu Priyovina Hasto salvismitakilaha Siddhadvarabhati basa Vyastantak pudabhartmana Prabhu prasada deshanta Pravishchascharya vahina Purva vyasa iva vyasam Prasadasya gato muni Bhutavishto mahonmada Grihitascha. Sri Parikshit said, Noble Mother, after hearing Ugrasena's advice, Narada, the dear devotee of Lord Mahavishnu, became absorbed in the taste of exalted love of God, which seized him in its grip. Forgetting everything else, he started off, Veena in hand. Having spent much time before in Dwarka, Narada automatically took the familiar roads to the center of the city. Amazing roads that led to the neighborhood of the Lord's palaces, and came to a palace of Krishna's that he knew how to reach from earlier visits. Under the spell of intense transcendental agitation, Narada seemed like an ordinary person haunted by a ghost. Commentary. As this chapter describes, what Narada says to Uddhava and the other devotees in Dwarka inspires them to discuss the present situation in Braj. Overhearing these talks, Krishna becomes bewildered in ecstatic love. When Narada left Hastinapur for Dwarka, he could think only of how wonderful are Krishna and his devotees. He picked up his veena, but was too distracted to play it. How then did he manage to find his way to Dwarka and Krishna's palaces? He managed because he had gone there many times before. He took the right roads, even without paying attention. As the road to the inner city approached the royal quarters, it assumed a bewildering appearance and took many unusual turns, making it a road ordinarily impossible for non-residents to follow. Narada seemed oblivious of what he was doing, and managed to arrive at his destination only because he was accustomed to the route. The truth is, however, that when one is conducted helplessly under the control of pure love of God, one actually understands everything perfectly. He certainly cannot forget the way to reach the personality of Godhead. So this is the difference between the temporary insanity of this material world and the so-called insanity or the apparent insanity that is manifested by a pure devotee when he's feeling devotional symptoms or ecstatic symptoms in love of God. In the material world, insanity causes one to lose orientation, forget who one is, but the result of it is chaos and confusion. The person can no longer function. The person no longer can, do what he's supposed to do, But in this case, although Narada was obviously ecstatic, and his symptoms will be more explicitly expressed in the next verse, but here it's being described that, you know, he's kind of on remote control. You know, sometimes when they're flying an airplane, the pilot, they'll put it on remote control, and the plane will just, it will go on its own strength. The pilot isn't actually guiding it. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is described by Krishna to Arjuna, that persons who are actually fully engaged in devotional service and absorbed in love of Krishna, their bodily activities are carried out, you know, automatically, as if, you know, they were being conducted outside of their own will. They're being conducted by the modes of nature. You know, each one of us has a way of acting and a way of being that is conducted by the modes of nature. But the devotee who is completely aloof from the identification of the body, you know, he may be somewhere else, inside, internally, even though his body is, you know, performing some activity that appears to be a normal activity in the material world. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada used the example of the coconut. You know, when the coconut, the hard shell around the coconut, when the meat of the coconut, the flesh of the coconut inside separates, you know, from the inside of the coconut, you can shake it and you can hear it rattling. So it's there, but it's not connected with the outside of the coconut. So a person who is actually transcendentally situated, sometimes, not always, but sometimes, in the state of ecstasy of his emotion and his love for Krishna, will appear to be exhibiting symptoms that are not normal. But in actuality, he actually sees things more clearly than a person who is so-called, you know, very well adjusted and intelligent and educated in the material world. He sees the situation very clearly. I used the example the other day. We'll use it again because it's very appropriate in this connection. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the story of the Avadhut Brahman, who had adopted the lifestyle of the Avadhut. The lifestyle of the Avadhut means that they renounce and reject anything within the material world. They have no social intercourse, no social interaction whatsoever. They, in this case, the Avadhut Brahman was laying down in the road, right? And he was not bathing. He was not taking care of his body. He was laying in his own stool, basically. Of course, the stool was smelling like roses, so no one should think that they can do that. You see sometimes in Govardhan, you see somebody naked just laying there, you know. But you get close to them and it's like, you can't even get close. You know, they smell so bad. But a person who's actually having these symptoms, they will not smell bad. They will be fresh. But not only that, but he was laying there and he would open his mouth, and if anything happened to walk in or fly in or, you know, a wind carry it in, then he would eat that. And he would maintain himself just on that. And he wouldn't make any other endeavor to maintain his body. So now people, ordinary people, when they see a person in such a state, they consider, oh, this person is really, you know, mad. He's really gone off. They're busy trying to evaluate one another based on what they know and how they look and how they influence others and how much they accumulate and, you know, how sophisticated they are in so many ways. So there, those people look at a person like that and think, oh, what an unfortunate, you know, person. But then when he was interrogated by, who was it? Was it Yudhishthir? Or, huh? Who interrogated the Brahmana? No, it was a king. It was one king. Do you remember the king? Name of the king? Anyway, it's not important. An enlightened king, maybe it was Prahlad. Anyway, he interrogated him. And when he started to question him, the Brahmin started speaking this completely elevated, eloquent exposition of spiritual philosophy. So deep. He was describing how he was seeing Krishna everywhere and how he was taking instructions from, you know, material nature as if Krishna was talking to him. And he used all these wonderful examples. And you know, the person who was interrogating him was just struck with wonder. Yeah, this person's not an ordinary person, although externally he appears to be like that. So Narada is exhibiting this symptom. He's so, you know, in anticipation of meeting Uddhava, he's become so ecstatic that he can't even play his veena. You know, when Narada travels around, he plays his veena and he chants, and this is what he does. You know, he's always doing Harinam Sankirtan and distributing the holy name everywhere he goes. What to speak of being able to find his way, you know, in a complicated situation like Krishna's palace in Dwarka, it's, you know, part of the security arrangement so that just nobody can go there is that the roads are very, you know, winding and there's different arrangements made to keep just anybody from being able to find it. So Narada found it because he had gone there many, many times before. And then Sanatana Goswami is commenting that although he appeared to be helpless, you know, the result of his helplessness is that he knew exactly where to go to find Krishna. A person who's actually in love of God, even though he may appear physically to be helpless or to be, you know, not acting in a way that's proper or normal socially, knows exactly what to do and where to go to reach Krishna. So these things are there in the scriptures so that the devotees can be educated to know what the symptoms actually are. You know, because sometimes externally the symptoms may be the same, may appear to be the same of a madman and a person, you know, like Prabhupada used to kind of warn us. When we first came to India, he would warn us that there are people who will look like they're following the symptoms of what's described in the scriptures for ecstatic symptoms. They'll roll on the floor, you know, and their tears will come out of their eyes, and they'll touch your feet, and all these things. I remember one time I was in Calcutta. This was in the early 80s, and there was a Pandal program, and they wanted me to speak, so I spoke. And Bhakti Chumaraj translated. It was nice. They received it nicely. And then as I was coming down off the stage and just going to, I don't know, question and answers booth or something, this person came up to me and started going dancing and, you know, going like this, and then fell on the ground in front of me and started crying, you know, and trying to grab my feet, you know. And I said, whoa, this person's quite, you know, elevated person. And I didn't know what to do. I just kind of stood there and, you know, kind of looked embarrassed. And then I went on. And then not long afterwards, I saw that same person, you know, with his arm around the woman with a cigarette in his mouth, a bidi. I mean, sometimes we hear those kinds of examples that Prabhupada uses, but this was like right in front of my eyes. It was so clear. And then I could understand, oh, this is what Prabhupada was talking about, you know. So we have to not see just that somebody's eccentric or that somebody can do something unusual, you know, to evaluate what their spiritual position is. You have to actually see what's the effect, you know, they have on others, what their morality is, what they're actually capable of doing. Just like that Brahmin who was laying in the road, he was laying in his own stool, but the stool smelled like roses. In other words, a person who is in transcendental madness, his activities and nothing about him actually is obnoxious. It's not obnoxious. That's the point being made by Sanatana Goswami in the commentary. And we'll go on to text 4. Abhumau kvapi skalati patati kvapi tishtyachyachesta kvapyukam pam bhajati lutati Papiro didyata atartaha. Quap acro sham plutibir ayate gayati quapinrityan. Sarvam quapi shayati yugapat prema sampat vikaram. So now the symptoms are going to be described, are the symptoms. He sometimes tripped and fell to the ground, and sometimes stood motionless. Sometimes his body trembled, or he rolled on the ground, or he wept in great distress. He sometimes shouted and jumped about, sometimes sang and danced, and sometimes all the transformations of priceless love of God converged in him at once. Commentary by Shanatana Goswami, Digdarshini. The full manifestations of devotional ecstasy appeared in Narada's body as trembling, perspiration, standing of the bodily hairs on end, and loud crying. Only devotees advanced in prema feel the ecstasies that externally show as these symptoms. So in Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam, which is 8 very, very concise verses that describe the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness from the beginning to the end. Nayanam Kaladashudariya, Varanam Gadgaravya. We repeat it every morning in our morning program. It's described how a devotee who has gone through the phases of advancement of devotional service, who has taken up in good faith the Harinam Sankirtan process, and is realizing the exalted qualities and auspicious results, anandam buddhivardhanam vidyavijivanam, the fact that the holy name of the Lord is none different than Krishna, and he spreads, you know, good fortune and knowledge and perfect education, and increases the ocean of transcendental happiness wherever it goes, wherever it's distributed. Then that person, devotee, realizes nam nam ukadi bahudha nijasarvasham tis chitrapita niyamatatsme. He realizes that the holy name, there's actually no difference between the holy name and Krishna himself. In Rupa Goswami, in his Namastakam, he prays like this. Krishna Purna Bapushe Namo Namaha. He says that Namo Gokula Mahotsavayate Krishna Purna Bapushe Namo Namaha. He says that actually the holy name is a festival even for the residents of Gokul. The residents of Gokul have achieved the perfection of life. They're living with Krishna in spontaneous ecstatic love. And still for them, Nama Gokula Mahotsavayate, the chanting of Krishna's name is a festival. That's how they enjoy. They enjoy by chanting Krishna's name. And then Krishna Purna Bapushe Namo Namaha, that holy name is considered to be the most complete form of Krishna. Most complete form of Krishna. Binatman namanami no. Binatman namanami no. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. So, Nayanam Galara Shudariya, the devotee actually has gone through these phases of realizing that the holy name is not different than Krishna. Then, how to chant all the time? Trinadapi, Sanichina, Turo Api Sihishnana. He has to become free from false prestige, free from false ego, and has to be humble and tolerant. In this material world, there are always, in every circumstance, anywhere, reasons for our patience to be tested. There are always obstacles that come up. There are always difficulties. There's always problems. There's always perplexities. They come without our trying. In the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Prabhupada's saying, you know, when Arjuna felt perplexed, you know, these perplexities, Prabhupada said, come about without anybody trying. Just like in the forest, sometimes the wind blows and the bamboo rubs together if it's dry, and it'll start a spark, and then there'll be a forest fire. and so many living beings will be killed, and you know, people forced out of their homes, and it's a complete disaster. And no one's planning it, no one wants it, but it just happens in the natural course of the interaction, actions and reactions of the modes of nature. That's what life is in the material world. So Trinada Pisu Nichina Taroda Pisu Hishtana. The devotee who has come to the point of humility, who's able to tolerate, you know, all the onslaughts of material nature and the, you know, the threefold miseries, the onslaughts of material nature, those miseries that are caused by their own bodies or minds, because there's always some kind of difficulty, disease. We have our doctor, Gopaswami here. Doctors, it's always needed. There's always going to be need for doctors in the material world, because the body is always getting sick and needing, you know, some kind of repair or another, some kind of treatment or another. And so one has to tolerate these things. And in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, there's one section where there's, I think it's like five or six times, Krishna repeats again and again, Natum shochitam arasi. Don't lament. Don't lament the temporary happiness and distress of this material world. These things will come and go, always. Yam hina vyatyante te purusham purusharsupa. Sama sukha dukham diram somitat vayakalpate. Krishna never says that there will be no dukkha. He never says that. Now you become my devotee, now there'll be no dukkha. Don't worry. He says, sama dukkha sukham diram. He says, when there's dukkha, when there's sukha, you have to become steady, equipoised. Somitat vayakalpate. Then you can be eligible for liberation. So this is Trinada Pisu Nichina, Taroda Pisu Hishtana, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniyaksadahari. One has to be practice. One has to practice tolerating. Tolerating means that you continue with your devotional service, you continue with your relationships, you continue. You don't, you know, run away from this situation or run away from that situation or stop doing this or stop doing that based on the fact that it's difficult or that you experience some kind of suffering from it. And in that condition, you can actually chant Hare Krishna all the time. Kirtani Aksara Hari. When one comes to that stage, then he no longer is attracted very much to the temporary things of the material world. Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. He's not trying anymore to get followers or fame or women, or these things are no longer interesting to a devotee. All he's in, and he's not even interested in liberation. Janmani Janmarishwara. He doesn't even want to be relieved from the material existence, because he already is relieved from material existence if he's Krishna conscious. He just wants devotional service. A person who's actually in the line of Lord Chaitanya and following Lord Chaitanya strictly and advanced in devotional service only wants devotional service. And as Srila Prabhupada many, many times told us in his lectures and in his purports in his books, there's no service that is abominable in the service of the Lord. While we're conducted by the modes of material nature, there are certain things that we feel like doing and certain things that we don't feel like doing, depending on our nature, depending on the position that we've acquired in the modes of material nature. But if a transcendentalist, an actual transcendentalist, is no longer bound by that constraint of material nature. Therefore, when Prabhupada first started this movement, he would give us things to do, which we had, not only did we have no idea how to do it, but we had no inclination to do it. If it would have been up to us to, you know, some people, some devotees, if it would have been up to them to like start a magazine or publishing house or whatever, so many different things, we wouldn't have been interested. But because Prabhupada's order was there, and because the transcendental desire was there, and the advancement came from association with Prabhupada, naturally, the devotees were able to do those things, and not only did they not become bothered by them, but they became very happy doing them. Very happy doing them. Under such a state of consciousness, a Brahmin will be happy doing anything. A person who was born in the Brahminical nature, he'll be happy doing anything in Krishna's service. Or a Shudra will be happy doing anything. Ayinanda tanuja kinkara patita ma vishame babambado kripaya tavapada pankaja. He says, then in that state of consciousness, one begins to taste, one begins to feel connected with Krishna, conscious of Krishna's presence. And then this mentality, I'm your servant, but somehow or other I've fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Now please, it's up to you now. Nothing I can do. I'm helpless. I'm insignificant and I'm helpless. You must pick me up. If you don't pick me up, there's no hope. And then Nayanam, Kaladashudari, coming to the verse. He's hankering for the day when he tries to chant Hare Krishna, his voice will choke and tears will flow from his eyes, because inside himself he will be feeling such transcendental pleasure. So in Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he analyzes all these different symptoms, what they mean, what are the impetuses of those ecstasies, how they manifest in the bodies and minds of great devotees. And here, Narada, as he's going to Uddhava, to Krishna's palace, remember, he's going to Krishna's palace to meet Uddhava because Uddhava's always with Krishna. Basically, Uddhava never goes home. He just stays with Krishna all the time. And the only time he leaves Krishna is when Krishna sends him somewhere on some mission. And sometimes he goes with Krishna, on a mission. But he never leaves Krishna unless Krishna specifically tells him, go and do this. I want you to do this. He's that dear to Krishna, that intimate, that close to Krishna. We say in the West, thick and thin, not a fair-weathered friend. Anyway. So all these different symptoms are there, and Narada is experiencing these symptoms, and sometimes all of those symptoms were coming into him at once, and he couldn't do anything. It would just fall down on the ground. That was it. Couldn't do anything. He man mata idhanim tvam sabadhana tada bhava stiratam prapayanti mam sadhayam shrinidam swayam. My dear mother, please now be fully attentive. Listen soberly, with steady concentration, to what I am about to say. Commentary. Parikshit Maharaj wants his mother to listen carefully, so that the Supreme Lord's pastime he is about to describe will enchant her mind and awaken her ecstatic love. Parikshit knows from his own experience that the insanity of love for Krishna is in fact the most natural condition of the soul, and that devotees infected with this insanity are more sober and in touch with reality than anyone else. So this is a very important verse, because this verse describes Jai Shishi Krishna Balaram Ki Jai Shri Giri Dharat Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Shri Gorni Thai Ki Jai. It's very important because this verse describes the secret of hearing. The soul is in its natural state a lover of Krishna. Nitya Krishna Siddha Prema. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sabokabonai. The soul is by nature, in the heart, in love with Krishna. So when a soul who is awake in love of Krishna hears something about Krishna, it awakens not just attentiveness, but it awakens ecstatic feelings and emotions and happiness, unlimited happiness. So here, Parikshit Maharaj is telling his mother, now you please hear attentively, you know, with steady concentration. You know, the mind is flickering. This is explaining why it is we accept regularity, why it is we accept austerity, why it is we try to become free from the influence of the modes of nature. The devotees also try to do these things, but they're doing these things not for their own strength, to get strength to lord it over or to succeed in getting a position in the material world. They're doing it so that they can be, when they sit to hear, they will be completely attentive. Like I notice, you know, in the morning class, many times we're nodding, we're you know, either, anyway, there's so many things that can cause that. Either the sleeping is not enough, or some disease is there and the sleep has been broken, or maybe there's exhaustion from overworking, or whatever it is. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna at one point, you don't eat too much and you don't eat too little. You don't sleep too much and don't sleep too little. Don't play too much and don't play too little. In other words, we need all kinds of activities in order for our senses, in order for the instrument, the body is an instrument, you know, that is meant to receive sounds and pictures from the spiritual world. When we hear these pastimes in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavatamrita and other revealed scriptures, we are meant to be transported to these places, literally. And then there's no question of us falling asleep, because we'll be so enlivened, we'll be so, you know, our eagerness will be so much, you know, awakened that we couldn't fall asleep if we tried. So we need to get out of mode of ignorance. We need not to sleep too much. We need not to sleep too little. We need not to eat too much. We need not to eat too little. And how you tell if you're doing these things too much or too little? How do you tell? How do you measure it? You measure it when you sit down in the class and your mind is fixed and you hear and you are enlightened and you feel uplifted and you feel like you're going somewhere. And then eventually, of course, you taste transcendental pleasure by hearing about Krishna and his devotees. This is the reason why we're adopting all these austerities and all these things. For no other reason than to awaken our love for Krishna. And it begins, the first stage of that begins when we can actually sit down and be attentive when we hear, either in the class, or when we're reading the book, or when we're chanting our rounds, or when we're doing, even when we're doing our devotional services. You know, we're sitting there, you know, cleaning something or doing something, and oh, when is this going to get over so I can do my bhajan? You know, so that I can get into the esoteric tikas of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. When will I be able to get, this is just some busy work that I'm doing so that I can, but actually, the fact is that the purpose of understanding those tikas is to be in ecstasy when I'm cleaning the plate for Krishna. If when I'm cleaning the plate for Krishna, when I'm cleaning the floor for Krishna, when I'm making the offering for Krishna, when I'm managing, when I'm preaching, when I'm doing whatever I'm doing, you know, and if I'm not in ecstasy when I'm doing that, then I'm doing something wrong, or I'm not doing it with full consciousness. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada told us, right from the beginning and all through his time with us, it is better to suffer than to protest. If you're struggling, and everybody struggles, don't think that there's no one who doesn't struggle. Everybody struggles at some point with these things. So here, Parikshit Maharaj is telling to his mother, now please be fully attentive. Not just attentive, be fully attentive And in back of that statement is the implication. Organize your life in such a way that when it comes time to hear about Krishna, when it comes time to chant Hare Krishna, when it comes time to do some devotional service for Krishna, whether it's picking flowers in the garden, or cooking in the kitchen, or cleaning a floor, or giving an exalted class, or studying, or managing, or whatever it is that you do in devotional service, you know, that you will be fully conscious of what you're doing, and you will feel transcendental pleasure, and you will want to do it better and better. I feel so guilty. I want to tell you how bad I feel. When I came back, and people began to hear the class, and everybody was very happy, the first thing they did was they cleaned this, because it was all, you know, kind of black, right? And I thought, oh, this is so nice. It was so pleasing. When I came back one day, the devotee brought it back and it was clean. And I said, oh, this is wonderful. This is so nice. This devotee cares. And then I come to the Tulsi Puja or the watch the deities and I see the Achman cup, you know, black and everybody's washing it, but nobody's polishing it. Nobody's actually making it shine and making it beautiful. Why? Because they're not connecting it to the deity in a personal way. Devotional service means you're doing what you're doing for a person. That's the only reason why somebody came and cleaned this for me, because, you know, they felt something, I don't know, something nice when in hearing or whatever, and they wanted to reciprocate. This is nice. This is devotional service. And I didn't ask for it. I didn't ask to have it done. It just came back one day and it was clean. And what happened? In my heart, I felt so good. I felt, this is so nice. This is devotional service. That was why, you know, I made the sarcastic comments about the, you know, the strings in the kartals and all these little details. And then when you do have a clean string on a kartal and you're playing, and it's just nicer. It's nicer. You can see you're respecting the things that belong to Krishna, as if they actually belong to Krishna. And ultimately, you know, tadiyanam samacharam, ultimately, you'll realize, if you continue to advance in this way and hear attentively what's being said here in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Briya Bhagavatamrita, you know, you'll realize that these are the, you know, these things are the goal. And you'll be happy. More than happy. And then, you know, the temporary things that happen in day-to-day life, and somebody says something to you or doesn't understand what you mean and, you know, causes you to feel tension or pressure, whatever, they'll just go out the window, like a breeze. They'll blow right out the window. And then what will be left? What will be left is your happiness and your eagerness to hear and to chant and to do any service for Krishna. You know, the inconvenience. I mean, let's just take it to the ultimate point. The gopis are the ultimate devotees. They are the highest devotee. They are most dear to Krishna. But what is their mentality? It's not that we should think, oh, I can become a conjugal lover of Krishna. I can, you know, like do all these things. No, what is the essence of, why is it, what is the essence? The essence is that they love Krishna so much that if Krishna puts them in a position that causes them to feel uncomfortable and Krishna somehow or other gets pleasure from that, then that discomfort becomes their pleasure. The devotee's pleasure is making that extra effort to do something a little nicer for Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna, and ultimately tadiyanam samachanam, for anything connected with Krishna, particularly Krishna's devotees. See, Narada is feeling like this. Why? Because he's going to Krishna's place. But he's going on the words of Ugrasen to see Uddhava, the devotee of Krishna. And he's feeling ecstasy in anticipation of seeing Uddhava. Anyway, I'll say one thing. It jumps ahead a couple of verses, but anyway, I'll say it because it fits so well into what I just said. When Uddhava got there, and they, you know, all the people who were there, all the devotees were there, were trying to deal with him, you know, they sat him down and they tried to make him feel comfortable. And what was Narada's response? He's there in Krishna's place. He's in Krishna's palace in Dwarka. Krishna's right in the next room. And he said, just bring me Uddhava. I have to meet Uddhava. Please, introduce me to Uddhava. So even in Krishna's presence, in his palace, right in the next room, all he thinks about is Uddhava. And he's getting these ecstatic symptoms because of how he's feeling about Uddhava and how he's thinking about Uddhava, not Krishna. Directly. So this is the secret of devotional service, actually. And it is being spoken again and again and again in Brihat Bhagavatamrita specifically, because it describes the Bhagavatam essentially through the descriptions of the glories of the devotees. So such persons are, you know, more sane and more in touch with reality than anyone else. They don't play games with one another how to avoid devotional service. They don't complicate other people's lives by saying something behind or doing something to make it appear that that person is service isn't, you know, this, that, the other, so that I can risk that, the other, blah, 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 blah. If you're into that, then we can for sure, you know, just like we know that winter's coming, we don't have to speculate, you know, winter's coming. It's like in the summer, you don't throw away your winter clothes, you know, because you know for sure. Because every winter, it's gotten cold since the beginning of time. So you keep your winter clothes, you know, tucked away, and then when it gets cold, you bring them out and you put them on. So we'll know for sure that we will no longer see you, whoever it is, if you maintain this mentality. Doing politics behind other people's backs, trying to, you know, make the other person's service seem like it's not less because we want, you know, all these different things. Trying to, you know, put ourselves to be more learned or more, you know, this or that or whatever. This is the secret of devotional service. To learn how to serve the devotees and love the devotees. To see the devotees' devotional service and reciprocate accordingly, attentively, consciously. And the result is that Krishna becomes so pleased that he will give you everything. And even if you don't want it, he'll give it. Even if you're not trying, he'll give it to you. This is pure Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.